Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here to talk about all of the comics that are coming out. Not all of them, but all of the ones that have made it into our stack, our personal stacks. You know what I'm talking about? The pull list, the comics, the freshies that you get in your hands every Wednesday that you just race home. I remember the feeling of literally running home the last couple, you know, miles at least, just to get that first comic open. Pete, do you ever feel that? What's the longest you've walked for a comic book?
Oh, man, I've definitely done some. I mean, we're, you know, kids, we biked. I would bike to the, you know, the baseball card store / comic book store when I was little. So, yeah, man, that was miles and miles. So I don't know. But
My most distinct memory was walking like probably 4 miles to the local store called Pasco's in Way of State, New York, and they had a spinner rack, and that's where I got the summer annuals. That's what I'm talking, Vibranium Vendetta.
Dude, we had Tops and spinner racks, bro. Come on, Tops never stops, bro. Let's do it.
Yeah, Tops never stops. What were you going to say, Pete, before we, because we got to get to these comics.
Stack's getting hot. Yeah, but my favorite part of the stack was once I would buy my comics, putting it in my reading order was my favorite part, where it was like, dude, you can't put that favorite up top. You know what I mean? You got to save that bad boy. You know?
So. Well, hit us up in the comments with your feelings on this, because I was the same way. I was like, it's not my favorite comic goes up top. The favorite goes like 2/3 of the way through. Yeah, the top is like sort of the hot button issue, a quick read. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and then later on, 2/3 of the way through is when you get to the meat. That's like yum yum, and then you get a couple of the backside that are just sort of the denouement, the sort of like getting you out of there. It's a little bit of dessert, aperitif, digestif, getting you out back on the little tap on the ass, get you out back out on the street. is that last couple, the bottom of the stack? That's why it's the bottom, because it's giving you a little
the
just
classic,
hard hand.
JT Sizzle saying, the old tap on the ass, get you back on the
street. The old tap on the ass. You guys know what I'm talking about, get you back on the street. That's what the stack's all about. What's going to be tapping your ass in this stack? We'll find out. But first, we got to start at the top of the stack. We're talking about one of my most anticipated comics of the week, and that's Black Cat number one.
Get it, JT
Kicking
Sizzle.
It.
Get it.
This
Come
is
on,
from Marvel Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Glev Melnikov. Black Cat, one of my favorite characters. I've loved the series. Jed McKay made Black Cat his, like, home. It was the comic that he sort of got in and up at Marvel on. This is now, G. Willow Wilson has taken the mantle with a new number one here. Pete, what do you say about this Black Cat?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Because here's the thing with it. Here you go, you go.
I'll tell you what, this was a solid start. You know, we kind of, later in the stack, we kind of figure out what's going on a little bit, but we see Spider-Man ghosting Black Cat and not engaging at all. And I was like, yo, what the fuck is going on? And, you know, like her, she's like, I'm sick of this shit. And I was like, I feel you, man. You know, I feel like this is a great setup. I'm looking forward to what's more to come. I feel like maybe her in the bath was a little much, but you know how I feel about that bullshit.
You're talking about everyone's got to get clean. I know cats don't like to take baths, but they gotta sometimes. And you know what? When Felicia drops in that tub, I'm here for it. We get a nice. This is the thing Pete's talking about. Is it is set in like cutting edge, Amazing Spider-Man continuity. Something's happened with Peter Parker in this current arc that is making his relationship with Black Cat a little fraught, and in general, fucking up his life. And so, like that part, I was like, oh, I don't think I need this to be so tied to Spider-Man because I think Black Cat can stand on her own. But I really liked the focus on Night Nurse here. We get some fun lizard stuff. This comic has a nice, like, light tone to it with still having stakes underneath it and getting into some interesting stuff. A lot of the recent Black Cat comic book work has been focused on her history, her father, her connection to the larger Marvel universe. What I like about this is it's rooted back in more Spider-Man, the Spider-Man corner of the universe. We get Lizard, we get some reveals at the end with some other Spider-Man villains that I won't say. But I like that area for her, and I think this is a nice start. Tonally, this is right where I want it to be. So excited to see where we go with this.
And it's in great hands, so I'm excited to see what happens. Solid first issue.
100%. Solid number one. Def, pick it up. Let's move on to Justice League Red number one. Mm-hmm. It's a red alert when it comes to DC Comics with this book, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Clayton Henry. Now, we've seen a premise like this many times before. There's too many problems out in the world for your main super team to deal with, in this case, the Justice League. So they have to have a separate splinter force meant to deal with larger problems that haven't happened yet. Your sort of Minority Report type of heroes. We saw this recently in the Marvel Universe with the Forge-led X-Force title, where they were dealing with stuff that hasn't really happened yet. But we've seen it so many times over the years. But this one has a nice flip to it that I really liked. Pete, how did you feel about this?
Yeah, and, you know, spoilers, we're going to kind of spoil some shit here for a lot of these comics, so just kind of heads up on that. But this was awesome. I love this kind of setup where we're kind of like thought things were going in one direction, and then it seems like, you know, this is how I was reading it, that Red Tornado set a trap to have Black Adam notice what was going on. Oh, dude, that blew my fucking mind, dude. That seems like a really cool, interesting idea, and I feel like they did a good job of setting that up in this first issue. So, yeah, let's do that. That seems fun. So I'm excited to see where this goes.
What's cool about this is, like, we get the setup, the premise is sort of said by Red Tornado. But like Pete's saying, after we get into this sort of first origin adventure, it feels like Red Tornado may be leading them astray. And I think, in general, for years, we've had a lot of comics that are like, well, the algorithm is helping these people fight crime. And now we've gotten to a point with AI in the real world that I think everyone in the comic book industry is turning, a very reactive industry, obviously, because it's, you know, on a tighter schedule than so many other movies and TV. So that's cool. And this is starting to be like, oh, maybe AI is not the right thing to get us in a better place. And that's where this comic has the potential to go, which I am really interested in. I want to talk about the team we have here. There are some characters pictured on the cover that don't all appear in this issue, so I won't say all of them. We do get Simon Baz, Green Lantern, who I really like, sort of an underused Green Lantern. I feel like when he was brought into the Green Lantern fold, it was like, he's the Green Lantern with the gun. And everyone's like, okay, and then has been sort of left to the side. But Saladin Ahmed brings him in here. I really like him here. And then we get Power Girl, which is also good. So I like how rooted in the current DC continuity this is, and taking the premise that we think it's going to be and putting it just a little bit on its edge. Red Tornado, a character I've always liked since I had the action figure who would spin a little bit. He would just kick a little bit, right? He would just move his hands a little bit back in the day. You squeezed his legs and his hands moved.
That's right. Making the pretty tornado. Cool.
Yeah, just I mean, he did a little bit.
That was height of technology back then, bro. You know what I mean?
And back in the day, it would work fresh out the box. You were like, whoa, he moves. And then every time after that, you were like, he doesn't quite move. Those plastic parts, like our aging human body parts, don't work as well as they used to. Right, Pete?
That's right, man. Don't squeeze me. I'll kick you.
That's something that I never believed until it happened to me. Let's move on to our next comic, one that I know Pete and I are both pretty hype on. That is Escape Number One.
Yes, dude.
From Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Daniel Acuña. You know, we're Remender heads from way back. Fear Agent was a comic that we read from the jump, and we were all on board with it. Rick Remender, one of the most diligent, I feel like, comic creators out there, who really feels like he doesn't put out a comic unless he has the artist he wants to be working with on it, and the book is in the exact right place for him. He's, you know, he has his books under his own umbrella and brings books to the market that I am always excited about. He takes creative swings all over the place. We're going to talk about another book of his later that I've been really enjoying, but Escape Number One, Pete, what do you like about this world?
Well, first off, you got to give a shout out to the team. Like you mentioned, R&D is killing it here. Rick and Danielle.
That's what they're calling themselves, R&D.
Yeah, R&D.
Research and development.
R&D. Fucking killing this. This is such a cool thing here. You get this war story, but it's animals. So it kind of lightens it a little bit. But the art still kind of grounds it. So, man, it's this tone, this vibe. First off, crazy cover. Love it. Okay. But what I do want to say
is, you got
a
cute bear with a gun. Uh-oh.
It's not that cute.
First off,
it's serious. It's a serious kind of a cute bear. You know,
well, he
looks
serious, but he has a cute vibe.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
You could be Kate Pete. I got news for you. You can be cute and serious. Look at me.
That's true. You can.
Look at me, Pete.
I don't want to. Okay,
Pete, look at me. Look at me.
No, I will not. I want to say something here. Read the back matter first before you read this comic.
First?
It's really cool.
No. You get to hear. Don't do that.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. You get to hear Rick Remender talk about the story and what he wants to do with it. I think it's important to read before.
Read it first.
Yes. Read the back matter first.
It would be front matter. It would be front matter if it was meant to be read first.
No, man. Do not. Read it first.
Plus, I dare you to read the back matter without spoiling the last page of this comic.
That's what I'm saying. Don't read the last page of the comic. Read
Very
the back
hard.
Matter.
Do you know how pages work?
Yes, yeah,
you have the word page, then, the word page in your name, and you should know how they work.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. You can do it. I believe in you, and it's very cool.
This comic, I'll lay out the premise a little bit. It's a very like hardcore World War II. If you've ever seen the movie Memphis Belle or talked to anyone about just like the air campaign of World War II, this comic is firmly rooted in that. Honestly, it's like very much Memphis Belle. The back matter is excellent. I would recommend just reading the whole thing because Rick talks about how his family history associated with World War II, and Daniel Acuña also had that.
R&D,
that struck
baby.
A huge, R&D, huge chord with me. My grandfather was a would have been one of these guys. He flew out of North Africa in World War II. He was the tail gunner in a bomber. So like this is like legit right in that world. So I was like super tied in, especially reading the back matter when they were talking about Rick was talking about his connection to it. My grandfather flew out of North Africa. They had a pet monkey they would bring up in the plane with them.
What?
And he flew like there's a 25 mission cap. And that's what they talk about in the book,
but they
got extended. That's the plot of Memphis Belle. That's the plot of this book. And same thing happened to my grandfather. So man, this like was right over the plate for me. But man, he also talks about how it's something true that humans empathize more in stories, especially visual stories, where an animal is hurt over a human being hurt.
Yeah, because I'm more worried about this monkey than your grandfather. Like, was the monkey there to give orders and to help with shells? Like, what was the monkey doing?
Yeah, no, it was the general in charge. He wore like
great.
A hat
Smart.
And had,
Smart.
You know, back then it was just World War II was a crazy time and a
we're
monkey
all looking for peanuts back then. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that monkey really did work for peanuts. It was like an Air Bud situation, but much more serious.
Cool.
You know what
cool.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's no rule that says a monkey can't be a general. And so they just put him in charge.
Smart.
Wild times. And honestly, he really had some great ideas about how to push pushback. He was the one who had the inflatable tanks that General Patton was guarding.
Wow.
When they were really making the push on D-Day. That's true history if you want to look it up. Maybe they weren't inflatable, but they were fake. But this is all to say that this story is heartfelt. It's super upsetting what happens in this first issue, but from an action point of view, it really sets up for a fantastic series. So much happens in this first issue. This is one of my favorite reads of the week.
Yeah, this is awesome. This first issue grabs you and doesn't let you go. I cannot wait to read what's next for this. Love the team. Come on, R&D. Let's go.
I think we should have a chimpanzee who just really be put in charge of this show. That's basically what we have this week with me running everything. Let's move on to our next book, which is the all-new Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Paolo Villanelli, bringing a character I really love, especially in her own book, Spider-Gwen. She had a series that I want to say was written by Rob Williams for a long time that I really liked. It was when she was in her other Earth and she had a band. She was connected with her father. And we saw a lot of different takes on different Spider-Man villains and heroes. There's a lot of gender switching in that particular planet universe. So that was really cool. And this book is actually dealing with a lot of sort of that Gwen's interest in recapturing that part of her life. Pete, how did you feel about this?
This was all right. I love the art. You know, we got Venom on bass here in the band. And, you know, so Spider-Gwen on drums. So, I mean, I'm excited to see how this band's going to sound now that Venom ate the bass player. Because we know how Venom reacts to different noises. So playing in a band is risky, bro. You get some feedback on those mics, dude. Oh, Venom's going to be toast. We'll see.
Bassists are famously ordery, but... Yeah. You don't really want to have a bassist that hates music.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Most bassists hate themselves, but they like music.
Hey, man, don't attack the bassists, man. We need the bass.
Yeah, they're our fan bassists.
Oh, boy.
Why don't you like Spider-Gwen?
I don't know, man. It's not...
Well, that's interesting. Why? Like, why? Because I need
more Spider-Man. Like, I get enough Spider-Man. I don't need another Spider-Man type character.
I'm so sorry. You clearly don't understand comic books like, when the flavor hits, get more of that flavor.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe some people love Spider-Gwen. I'm happy for those people.
I love Spider-Gwen. Well, and great. I like this comic a lot. It's paying off, like I said, a lot of the stuff that was set up before. I do think it's crazy the way she pulls a band together. A friend stops by, and then a bassist is like, you need a bass? Or he's the guitarist. He's like, yeah, you need a guitarist? I'll be there. I'll do that for you. And I was like, that's crazy. The little backstory on Spider-Gwen as well. In her recent continuity, she lost her powers and had a symbiote suit that was giving her her powers. That was cool and interesting,
this is also going to be foreshadowing about what's about to go down.
There's some foreshadowing here about some deaf trubs coming Spider-Gwen's way.
Yeah,
but I enjoy this. I think I like the art. It has sort of a horror feel to the book, which I think is interesting. Not something. In the past, it had an otherworldly feel. It felt outside of continuity. This is obviously more in continuity because it's in the 616. And a horror feel, like, I'm here for that. It'll make it more different than the other Spider books, Pete, which should make you feel something. For God's sakes, Pete, feel something. Maybe you feel this next comic we're going to talk about, Absolute Batman number 11. Yeah. I know you do. Published by DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, Clay Mann.
Clay Mann.
Not Clayface, but Clay Mann on the art. Pete, why don't you take this comic, because you've talked about it, you've clapped your little hands about it. Let's hear about it.
I mean, first off, fucking sick cover, bro. I mean, holy shit. You know what I mean? This is just...
Bane got those pecs popping on this cover.
Dude, just chilling on his throne, bro. Just kind of ready to start shit. I mean, just seeing that cover gets me excited for what's about to go down. And what we get in this is just an over-the-top fight. I mean, I was just, this is just, first off, the art is just unbelievable. This is chef's kiss kind of balance between storytelling and action. I feel like this story is just awesome and all the right things are kind of happening right now. If you're not reading this comic, what's wrong with you? This is just a ton of fun. I mean, Bane ripped Batman's arm off. I mean, holy fucking shit. I lost my mind reading this, and I'm still trying to put it back together. This just kicks so much ass. It's a whole different level, and I love this idea of, like, let's juice up Batman, go over the top, just get crazy and kind of see what happens. And Scott Snyder's having an absolute blast of a time, and I am having so much fun reading this goddamn comic. Why aren't you reading this comic?
It's interesting because we were talking about this on the live show that we just recorded yesterday, that this feels like all the other Batman stories, even the ones that go into the dark stuff, the dark metal stuff that Scott Snyder did, were really pushing it. We're punk rock, whatever you want to say about it, metal. Mm-hmm. But it still felt like Batman was on a little bit of a leash. And it feels like what they've done with this book is fully unchained the Batman universe, where anything can happen. Now, this issue particularly, we're introducing Bane. There's been a lot of takes about how Batman is thick. Extra thick in this absolute universe, and who can beat a thick Batman but an even thicker Bane?
Yeah.
So we get a dude that is like, my apartment is the size of his hammy, and I could live inside Bane's hammy, really. So that's pretty big. And then we get the story here that is a history of Bane. We see Batman get, like, basically wrecked. Yeah. And then another, like, I think the sort of Nightfall Batman come through, which I thought was interesting because it doesn't happen, right? It's just a vision of what could happen in this comic, right?
Yeah.
So Batman doesn't actually get his arm torn off. This whole issue is Alfred narrating a story when he was like, I should have warned you about Bane. He's coming for you. But it doesn't happen, and then we get sort of a twist at the end that I won't quite say, that is interesting, and it's going to set up for a great confrontation between Batman and Bane. But I thought it was interesting to have something be like basically a flight of fancy here. I really like the Bane origin and the tweaks to it. One thing I want to ask you, though, Pete, there's this character that comes, that lands down in Santa Prisca and meets Bane once he's liberated the island. Is that Bruce Wayne?
I don't know.
The man in white.
Yeah, the man in white. I don't think so. I don't think Bruce Wayne's ever been that suave. You know what I mean? Like, when
he certainly looks like him.
He definitely looks like him.
So let me ask you this. Is there a chance that the man in white is a Hush style, absolute Hush situation that we're introducing here? Or are we going to say that perhaps this actual Bruce Wayne was just more of an asshole at a point in his life?
Not to sound like a broken record, but I would like to back up the truck a little bit here. And you've brought up some interesting things that I would like to circle back around to. So you get this absolute Batman, right? And you're thinking, oh, my God, Jack Batman. How's this going to work? And then if Batman's this jacked, how big is Bane? And they've done such a great job of, like, how sick would this battle be? And, like, kind of letting it ramp up. But then we get this Bane backstory that I get so lost in. I'm like, what comic am I even reading right now? This story is so good. And that's what's really impressive about this package that we have here. This isn't just like, fuck, like over the top metal fucking violence and super, you know, like Batman just fucking shit up because he's roided out, juiced up Batman. There's still like amazing storytelling going on. Like, this Bane backstory was phenomenal and different from what we've seen, but also still feels like Bane. I was just really impressed by what's happening and the level of this isn't just over the top kind of meathead action. Don't get me wrong. You get that.
You like that.
Oh, yeah. It's fucking great. But there's also like a real depth to it, which really is nice. And man, I've just been super impressed with not only the writing, but the art and the action in this. And you think it's going to be one thing, but it really does such a great job of exceeding those expectations and giving you a whole nother level here.
And I like the twist that the Venom actually makes Bane super smart as well as super juiced, which that's a cool twist.
That's a dangerous combo, bro.
Dangerous combo. Brains and brawn? What a package.
Come on.
Hello, Mr. Wright. cute and serious? My. Oh,
my mind.
What did you think of the full page spread of the, like, sort of the Nightfall style Bruce Wayne Batman? The sort of a Punisher style Batman.
Well, I mean, of course, I'm excited about it. You know what I mean? I feel like a badass Batman is a fun choice. I'm worried that he's going to get his arms ripped off. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they're already fake, according to what one of them is anyway. I guess we'll just have to wait and find out because we don't know what we're talking about. Let's move on to our next comic. Not yet, but we will. We could speculate all day, air day.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Exquisite Corpse is number 4. This is from Image Comics, written by Shay Grayson with James Tynion in the 4th. Yes?
I don't know why this isn't called Golden Crossbow number 4. You know what I mean? Come out.
That's true. But it is not. It's called the Exquisite Corpses number 4. Written by Jay Grayson with James Tynion the 4th. Art by Adam Gorham and with Michael Walsh. This book has been. It is an Exquisite Corpse in that it's James Tynion sort of guiding the ship with different writers and artists coming in to tell the story of this. Hunger Games-esque tournament where a bunch of small town of regular people is taken over by the richest people in the world, or in the United States anyway, who come through with their own. They each brought their own serial killer. Great to have one on staff.
Oh, you gotta have one.
To come through and just rack up kills. Whoever has the greatest kill count wins. They have a weapon cache they have to find in the town. That's what this issue is concerned with, as we see some characters just killing lots of people. Pete, you like this type of story.
Yeah, right? I mean, it opens with a personal nightmare of mine, and that's a bunch of people dead in a ball crawl. I mean, that's got to be impossible to clean. You know what I mean? Because you got to clean all those balls.
Are you talking about a Chuck E. Cheese style ball pit?
Yeah. The old ball pit of death. You know what I mean?
You don't have to clean. You just have to clean the top. I don't know if you've been in a ball pit lately, but the bottom still got Band-Aids and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. To clean it right, you got to take a ball. You can't just clean the top of a ball crawl, bro. You're not doing anything. You know,
as long as it looks good enough for a kid to jump in, that thing's cool.
That is just so wrong.
Yeah, and if you want to find out who else thinks that, talk to the managers of a Chuck E. Cheese or a McDonald's place. Because they're in my camp here.
I wish they weren't. I wish they weren't. This has such a great creepy tone with the art and everything, and this is gross, over the top fun. You know, a lot of blood and guts and. You know, I was, you know, as soon as I see a crossbow, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely rooting for her. But then you get the threads kind of guy, and it's hard to have a favorite. I mean, a lot of cool psychopaths in this.
Put that on the cover. A lot of cool psychopaths in this. That's a Pete LePage book jacket quote if I've ever heard one. But I agree with you. This is just, it's got all the horror and violence of a lot of the comics we've been talking about in this stack, but in a very complex trap that I think we have some characters that we've met who live in the town that we're following, and it doesn't look good for them. I'm curious, it's such a big story. We get in the back matter, we get sort of the... NCAA Final Four style brackets of the serial killers. And it is cool to see that, but I'm like, there's so much story here. I'm a sucker for a
bracket, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love a bracket.
I love a bracket. I like to do it in my day-to-day with my kids and stuff. Just like, who's going to eat lunch? Bracket, bracket. That kind of stuff. Really fun. Competitive. Fun.
Yeah.
You know, want to really... You know, if you don't have a sociopath, it's harder to end up with one, but I'm trying, you know?
I appreciate your dedication to the craft, bro.
Hey, you know, exactly. It's going to be my gift to you, Pete, is like a real-life serial killer.
Wow.
Your dream. I'm curious how we're going to get to all of the story here, because there's so much happening. Mm-hmm. This also has big aspirations. There's a game coming out around this. Like, this is a big idea and a big story. And the comic book story feels like it's matching that. I'm just curious how we're going to get to so much. It's such a big meal.
But a nice one.
But a nice meal, like some of the best. Speaking of a big meal, let's jump to Marvel, all on one number
extra
one.
Extra large cover or comic here. This is 55 pages, baby.
Hoo! We have The Thing versus the Marvel Universe. And this, it's from Marvel Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Ed McGuinness. And this is a big book.
Yeah,
but it feels like it's mostly to show off Ed McGuinness's art, where The Thing gets to... really cut loose, and that's the vibe of this book from the jump.
Yeah, it's really cool. Awesome cover, you know, except for the fact that Wolverine and Ghost Rider are falling to their deaths. Other than that, it's a blast. Yeah, it's fun to see Ben Grimm fucking shit up here. I mean, he's ripping heads, you know. He rips off Iron Man's head here. Captain Marvel really fucks him up, and then like he rips off of Spider-Man's arm, and then he uses like cars as Hulk hands, and then does a Thing smash, and then the Hulk's head goes flying off. I mean, I love me some head ripping, and this is just the Thing kind of really clobbering, and it's about that time, and he loves it, and I do too. And then it ends with a nice little he's just relaxing in bed after a long day of fucking people up, you know what I mean? So what's not to love about this?
Talk about a great day. I do like this cover with a lot of these big Marvel team-up stories, like Blank versus the Marvel Universe. You get a lot of the star characters. What I think is interesting is you got Firestar in a very prominent position here, right on the center of the center left of the cover. That's fun, a character I like. You don't really see much of her in the book, but that was cool. The art of this is beautiful. It's just an all-out big fight, lots of explosions. Ryan North, great writer, has a nice comedic tone to it throughout. A great synergy of just writer and artist coming together. But I wanted to say I love the way this story ends. The reveal of what's happening here is so sweet and such a nice story for The Thing, a character that I think I've said that I thought was underserved in the Fantastic Four First Steps movie. So nice to see him get some real play here. And you referenced it before, but I love the last page. Just The Thing laying in bed with Alicia and just smiling, bandaged up. It's such a satisfying image. Very cool.
Yeah, it really,
really
is.
Enjoyed it. Def pick up. And you know what else let's talk about is our next comic, which is another big comic, Detective Comics, number 1,100, a.k.a. 1,100, from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, Greg Rucka, Mariko Tamaki, and Dan Waters, with art by Mikel Janin, Alvaro Martinez Bueno, Aman K. Nahulpan, and Bill Sienkiewicz. Pete, a lot of stories here, and I gotta say...
Come on, Sankey, get in there, bro.
These were good. These were all... I really enjoyed these.
Yes. First off, cool cover. Has a cool, like, Tim Sale kind of feel to it. But, man, what a collection. The Lost and Found one right out of the box was a fucking banger, dude.
Get
you in the feels. Yeah. Oh,
I cried. I read this issue. This first story is so good, and it brought me to tears.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that there was like no dialogue just really made it amazing. Loved all the art. I mean, the kid is crying, hugging Batman. I mean, that was just so emotional. Yeah, and then the next one, you got him, like, chasing down Joker, which is fun. And then the one that were the nurses at the hospital is a blast. And just, you know, I just, it was just, it's such a great collection. Just one after the other. I mean, I was a little disappointed because Robin was on the cover and we didn't get any Robin. But, man, what a great collection of stories. This did such a good job of kind of honoring Detective Comics.
Yeah, with collections like these, I feel like it's hard to balance them because, you know, you're just taking the stories that come in. You go reach out to writers, they pitch what they want to do, or you pick up a pitch and put it in. And this is just so well balanced. The first story, just beautifully done, hyper emotional, very spare with the words. The art by Mikel Janin is so good. The second story, the Mariko Tamaki and Amanke Nualpan, is really nice, classic, like Batman, yeah, Bruce Wayne balance story, which I thought was good. You got to have that in here. The Greg Rucka story, The Knife and Gun Club, so good. Just great Rucka, like hard-nosed, set in Gotham, where it's about the people of Gotham more so than Batman, but we get a nice sort of spin. And then we end with just a great, like, moment in time where Bill Sienkiewicz's art is just let shine. And
thank you, bro.
Sankey, as he's never been called before, I don't think, yeah, but that's called first The Fall by Dan Waters. First time for everything. One of, again, top rec for the week. This is so good. This is definitely a pickup, I would say. But let's go to our next one, The Cold Witch, A Tale of the Shrouded College, number 4, which I believe was Pete's safety school, The Shrouded College.
Yeah, that's right.
From Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Will Sliney. This set in the world, we're dealing with a cold witch who's become sort of the object of the Shrouded College's pursuit. A lot of this is the chase to capture the cold witch. Pete, how do you like this?
It's great. I also really love the back matter, showing the art and kind of how it, the different stages before it gets into the comic that we know and love. So I'm always a sucker for that. But yeah, this is cool. It's a witch getting revenge, man. Love it. Love it. Great art, great action. And Charles Soule, we trust. So yeah, man, it's got a great team behind it. So what's not to like?
With The Shrouded College, Charles has been really sort of building out his personal universe. And each story, what I think is so smart about the way he's doing it is each story starts very far away from what's come before and then tracks back to sort of the main point, which is The Shrouded College. And that's what this issue builds toward in a really nice way. We get a character we've seen before that sort of doesn't die, I guess I should say, like a lot of characters in this comic do. He moves quick through his story. Things happen. It's really such a steady hand guiding this. Really enjoying this series as well. But let's talk Imperial number 3 from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Federico Vicenti and Iván Coelho. Pete, you seem to have a reaction here.
Dude. Oh, man. I've been waiting to talk about this, okay?
Why, I ask.
Okay. Maybe one of the most badass panels I've ever seen. Holy sick as shit alert. I mean, the Black Bolt entrance in this comic.
So we should say it's sort of a surprise that Black Bolt appears here. And let me set it up a little bit. Imperial, Jonathan Hickman's writing the ship of the intergalactic characters in the Marvel Universe. So we've got like Nova Corps. We've got
Hulkling. This is, but then Black Bolt shows up, and holy shit, things change real quick, bro. One of the best panels I've ever seen, dude. It blew my nerdy brain. It just melted me. I've yet to recover, dude. This is a
I could tell you seem a little bit unsettled.
Panel that was just so well shown. Like, that's the nice thing about comics is there's no budget. You can just do whatever your mind can envision, and this was just so cool, man. So cool.
Yes, and Pete will be talking more about it in his spinoff Panel Club podcast, where he goes panel by panel talking about other panels that he likes. It's much longer. Yeah. This comic is interesting. So this issue is about a little bit of a sort of Millionaire's Gambit type story between Maximus from the Inhumans, the brother of Black Bolt, the aforementioned Black Bolt, and Games Master, who have set this whole thing up. And it's a pretty dense story. It's a lot going on in this. And honestly, it reminded me of the last episode of Lost in a way that I was like, it's more, I want to see more stuff happening. I really like the characters that are on Peter Quill, that are sort of in play here. Peter Quill, Richard Rider, Nova, and what's happening with them. The last issue we went to the Wakanda part of space, which I thought was cool. We're bringing characters together, but there's just so much exposition in this comic that I enjoyed it less. I'm curious what we are going to get from this Black Bolt move and what Richard Rider does here. But I sort of wanted more movement here rather than just some chatty Cathys hanging out.
Well, they're kind of talking about their moves. And
my favorite thing. It's like a game of chess where they just talk about it.
But that's the thing, though. They make you earn the fucking moment that happens. And I feel like it's just so well earned that it really kind of blows things up for you. And I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen moving forward. And hopefully it'll be a little bit more kind of badass. So we'll see.
It's interesting, Black Bolt, because his powers are like he says one word and it's really big. Yeah. A lot of stuff happens.
Yeah.
I always think it's funny that he actually says words, though. Like, someone's like, what do you think, Black Bolt? And he's like, I agree. And everyone dies or whatever. Yeah. Like, I feel like, would you say, I feel like I would have a, I would have a catchphrase that I always said, rather than answer, no one's listening to him answer the question.
I would be like, my words peel your skin or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, you would sort of say what's happening?
Yeah.
I feel like I would say something like boom shakalaka or some. I would have like a particular, I would have a move. I would have like a Street Fighter 2.
That would be the last thing you ever hear is someone going boom shakalaka.
Yeah, that's the real revenge. But it's like, you know, Hadouken. Let's say Street Fighter 2. Like, you want to have a little word to say with your Sonic Boom.
Yeah, I would say, Boom. And then they would be dead.
You would do an Urkel quote to kill?
Yeah, kill him with Urkel.
You're going to be like a great serial killer.
Kindness.
Yeah. But when I think of kindness, I think of Urkel. You're going to be a great serial killer someday and probably soon.
Well, let's not move up that timetable. You know what I mean? There's plenty of time for that.
Yeah. Yeah, wait for it. But we won't wait for The Flash, Absolute Flash, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles. This comic, I feel like I was down on this when it first came out, but I've really been liking the layers. I feel like this comic, of all the Absolute comics, which I've enjoyed pretty much all of them, this one is adding layers on layers to the storytelling. The premise started super simple, and that was what I knocked it for. And now they just keep layering stuff on it. And so I recant every negative thing I said about it because I've been enjoying this.
You fell for their trap. They're like, oh, we'll get you thinking it's one thing, and then it's going to be completely not, and you'll have to eat your words.
Yeah. I'm eating my words.
But I do agree with it. I'm not a fan of The Flash, but I'm enjoying this. And that says a lot because it's impressive what they're doing in this comic. It's a lot bigger than The Flash, and Flash isn't in it much, which I very much enjoy.
But this issue is sort of a side story focusing on the Rogues that we saw in earlier issues of this and that we're definitely going to be sort of running into again very soon.
And I also love the classic kind of reveal here where it's like you think somebody is cool, but then they're like, oh, no, I have a cane. I'm actually an old villain. And, you know, that's just the kind of fun. So the old Kane villain reveal, you know, classic.
Yeah. Anytime you see a Kane, it's a villain. You're like, oh, that guy's a villain.
Yeah. Well, that's what comics and cartoons have told us over the years.
Yeah. And that's why you've been in trouble a lot lately for problematically fighting old and injured people.
That's right. I don't take shit from anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Take shit. You mean a person walking with a cane?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Hide your canes. Pete LePage is coming.
Don't look at me.
That's what I'm talking about. Hyde Street number 8 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Ivan Reyes. This comic dealing with a world where if you do wrong, sort of in the style of Ghost Rider, you will fall out of reality and end up taking a wrong turn down a little street called Hyde Street. It's very Twilight Zone-esque, except the way Twilight Zone gorier sort of had Rod Serling, Zone. Definitely gorier, had Rod Serling as an out-of-story narrator. Our narrators are the main characters, are these people who have their own internal problems. We have X-ray specs. We have a couple others that we're meeting, and I think the focus is shifting more toward them as we go. Pete, yeah, how do you like this?
The little wolf boy kid. I forgot what his...
Well, he is the Boy Scout.
Yeah, the Boy Scout. That's who it is.
Who, Pranky.
Pranky. That's what I was trying to think of. First off, yes. Cool cover. You got a cover inside a cover, which is always fun. You know, that whole chestnut. But, yeah, this is great because sometimes on Hyde Street we get kind of like other people interacting with our characters, but now these characters are kind of interacting with each other, which is great. Seems like they're kind of really taking this to another level, which is cool. I am very excited about the kind of mixing and matching that's going on and the interactions here with all these cool worlds that they created, that they're cashing in because these kind of bad guys are running into each other now. And Pranky kind of has a prank gone wrong. He goes for help, and you know, now some things are going south, and the X-ray guy could be in trouble. You know,
Mr. X-ray. Yeah,
you can't give somebody your X-ray glasses. That's like handing your powers over. You're in trouble after that.
I feel like Jeff Johns is just super giddy about this particular title. I mean, he's got a lot going on in Ghost Machine, but I feel like this is the one he personally is the most excited about. When we talked to him about Ghost Machine couple months back, probably five, six months ago now, this was the one that I feel like he's just the most hype about. And so you can feel that on the page, and that's really nice to feel a creator's energy there. The art's excellent, as you might have guessed, with Ivan Reyes on it. And he's expanding this world. We get Dr. Ego here, and we're getting into Mr. Odd Man is revealed at the end here, and just little extra pieces of the world and some of the rules of how it works. So I'm def enjoying this.
Yeah.
It's horror tainted. It's horror-y, but it's not as bloody and gory as some of the other books we were talking about earlier. For instance, if you're like Pete and that sort of.
Yeah, I can still enjoy this, and you know, I have a hard time with horror. But yeah, yes. It's doing such a great job of creating a world and then playing within that world. And yeah, it's really impressive, not only artistically, but kind of what's going to go down.
What's about to go down. Yeah. But what's about to go down in The Amazing Spider-Man number 10 from Marvel Comics, written by Joe Kelly, art by Michael Dowling.
Seems like
Dowling.
An issue of Daily Bugle, not Amazing Spider-Man. You know what I mean?
Yes. This is where
confusing.
I get all of my news is
it's
from the Daily Bugle.
It's a little confusing because I was like, wait, I didn't pick up the Daily Bugle. What's happening here?
Pete seems to forget what a newspaper looks and feels like. The cover of this comic is a Daily Bugle issue talking about how Spider-Man has turned brutal after his recent confrontation and fight with a giant warrior, armor-clad warrior from another place. Yes?
I'm just going to say, like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's important to note that you should read... Well, what do you think of this? I feel like you should read Black Cat first, then Amazing Spider-Man, right?
Interesting. I think the opposite.
Really?
I feel like you should read this first and then Black Cat.
Because Black Cat's kind of like, hey, what's going on here? And then you get the answer here. Where if you know the answer, it's almost not as much of a twist reading it. You know what I mean?
Well, but I feel like Black Cat's more reacting to the situation when this actually explains the situation a little bit more. But it is a mystery. So yeah. You could read them sort of out of order. But ever since Peter Parker fought Hellgate, where Hellgate just basically almost killed him on the streets of New York, he's turned into this much harder figure. And I think our reveal here is going to be that it's not actually Peter Parker. We get that at the end of this issue.
Yeah, the last panel, it's two people One saying, you're not Spider-Man, and the other one saying, you're not Peter Parker. So yeah, what the fuck is going on?
Neither of them are who they're supposed to be. So yeah. There's a lot more story to be told here. And I've said this before, but the Joe Kelly's run on this comic, I have really been enjoying the black and white flashbacks where he's really filling out Peter Parker's young life, where it wasn't all him just being sort of an aw shucks nerd trying to find his way in the world. He had struggles that normal people go through, and that has colored the life of Peter Parker and the story we're telling here. And this is especially good here. Because we see young Peter sort of like not understanding who he is and who he's becoming. And that's literally what's happened in this comic, even though I think it's not going to end up being Peter Parker by the end.
So my question is, who do you think it's a Mephisto situation, or is this like a Spider-Ham? Like, who are you thinking is portraying these? Is it just a Hellgate, like a demon from hell type of thing loose, or what do you think it's going to be?
I think it's definitely Hellgate. The next issue is double-sized, which Ooh. Is – it's also – it's Amazing Spider-Man 11, also number 975. So I think we're going to get the reveal next issue. Just context clues, I think it is Hellgate. Hellgate in the previous issue was like, what do I have to learn from this guy? He's weak. And I think the way that Hellgate is learning from Peter Parker and Spider-Man is by becoming him. And we're going to see that Peter is either in Hellgate's body in another place or somehow trapped somewhere else. And he has to watch Hellgate be cruel to everyone around him. That's what I think it's going to be.
But the bracelets that we see on the cover here, it could be a clue of maybe who he is. You know what I mean?
Well, we do get the character who has the most similar bracelets, Shocker, is the villain here.
Yeah.
And we see that. I think the bracelets are because a great detail in here is that this Spider-Man, his web fluid is much harder and lasts longer. It's like concrete and is really hurting the people that he wraps up in it. And I think that's such a smart little twist to this new Spider-Man. And I think the name Hellgate is like, it's a gate to hell. Like, I think that's Peter is seeing sort of the darkest version of himself, I think, from another place is what we're going to get. But I've been really enjoying this. It's sort of it's a very different run than a lot of the recent Spider-Man stuff. And I appreciate how different it is because it's deeper emotionally at the same time as it's weirder in what Spider-Man is facing.
Which is interesting because Joe Kelly, a phenomenal writer, loved the Joe Kelly's work. But sometimes he's known for more, or at least in my eyes, more of a, like, he's done a lot of touching stuff, but he's also done a lot of humorous stuff. And this is kind of neither of those yet. So I'm interested to see how this is all going to kind of land and unravel.
A new flavor from Joe Kelly, a writer that helped make Deadpool who he is. Back in the day.
Great.
Let's talk Wonder Woman, number 24 of DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Samperi.
Oh.
We have Wonder Woman on an island where a mouse man is in charge, and everyone serves the mouse man, speaks the mouse man's language, is sycophantic to mouse man. Wonder Woman encounters a girl who is part of that and is being hurt by some of the more militaristic Mouse Man people. She steps in and faces the ire of a lot of the soldiers and eventually the Mouse Man himself at the end of the issue. What'd you feel about this, Pete?
Well, first off, interesting cover. Kind of cool. But I loved Wonder Woman here being smart and kind of piecing things together and being like, okay, this kid can only say two phrases. And by the way, these phrases are repeated so much, it's haunting. It's like, it becomes
it's Pokemon-esque.
It becomes so much. I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in a cult or something just reading it over and over. But I love the fact that Wonder Woman kind of sees this and then kind of uses it as like, okay, this is the only thing you can say, and then gives her options where all she has to do is kind of say one of the things, but which thing says helps her out. I thought that was such a cool way to kind of like use Wonder Woman and kind of use her fucking history and the fact that she's dealt with, you know, language barriers before, people who want to help but can't.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a smart, cool way to kind of use her backstory. And yeah, great art and action, very enjoyable, kind of fun villain. But man, it's things like this that don't make me miss all the rats and mice in New York City.
Wow, Pete taking the Mouse Man rather literally here. You can avoid rats in the country, but you know you're going to find mice. Yeah, mice true. Crawling all over
not
you.
Not as bad, bro. Not as bad.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You got to get a cat. This comic has done a lot of like solid satire, I think, over the course of Tom King's run. This may be the most direct political commentary. This feels very commenting on our politics in America right now, in a way that I think is subtle enough to be under the radar, but smart enough to sort of indicate what the autocratic nature of a lot of current things happening in the U.S. government feel like. And I thought it was really well done. It's repetitive in a way that gets in your brain and sort of helps achieve the point I think the writing is going to. The Daniel Semperi art is excellent. I'm excited to see the confrontation that is no doubt coming next issue. So very good.
Let's move on to this. To be great.
Oh, it's been so good, so consistent. One of the most consistent out there. This ends tonight. I'm talking, of course, about the Stack podcast, which will eventually, this episode anyway, come to an end. But also this comic, This Ends Tonight, number 2, written by Image Comics, written by Jerry Duggan.
The Dukes. Duggan. Sorry,
Duggan. Jerry Duggan. Yeah. Kelvin Mao, Robert Windham, art by Jay Lee. Mm-hmm. So this
love
comic.
Love Jay Lee art, man.
Jay Lee art
going
hard.
As you see
it,
you're like, ooh, let's go.
This is like a, super spy bachelorette party?
Yeah, man, classic scenario, you know.
Or mercenary spies, bachelorette party.
Yeah, even spies and assassins have get married and stuff, so.
The bachelorette is the only one who's not a absolute badass warrior, and they all have a price on their heads, and so it's an all-out drag-out fight in Vegas as it all goes down. Pete, how'd you like it?
This is fun. Yeah, this is just kind of cool. The other assassins are trying to keep the bachelorette in the dark and kind of juggle this evening and having fun as well as keeping her alive and nobody getting murdered and then getting her to the wedding on time. The classic ticking time bomb that is, you got to be at this wedding on time. So yeah, this is fun. It's a kind of a fun premise, easy to get behind, and you know, I mean, you're really here for the art, and it is glorious.
It's a fun comic. The premise, it's just pure premise payoff. It's a great big fight. The Jay Lee art is really nice. It adds a little bit of sort of flair or artistic tension to the action in a nice way, very expressive. These characters are fun. It's really nice because they all care about each other in a great way in the midst of the increasing bounties on all their heads and the way they're just absolutely ripping everyone. Looking very much forward to the next issue, which it seems like it might be the wedding itself, which is very cool. Let's keep the Duggan train rolling as we jump to Godzilla Destroys the Marvel Universe, number 2 from Marvel Comics, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Guerrón, Paco Medina, and Juan Cabal. So now you're a Godzilla, absolute Godzilla freak, Pete.
Yes.
So this is something that you might enjoy. I feel like there's been so many Godzilla comics lately.
Yes, that's correct.
That they've been so close together that the moves are starting to feel a little bit like we get Fin Fang Foom here, which is something we saw very recently in another Godzilla comic. How does that feel for you? Someone who loves Godzilla, but are you being inundated?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not, you know, sometimes you get sick of something. I am not sick of this yet. And I'm also not sick of seeing Fin Fang Foom. He's one of my favorites. It was tough when they fought each other because I was like, who do I root for here? These are two of my favorites going head to head. But yeah, it kind of works out. You know, first off, cool cover. teasing Venom Godzilla. That seems insane and amazing.
I did enjoy that.
But we didn't kind of get this, although maybe hinted at, because there was a little goop on him afterwards. But we'll
a
see.
A light gooping.
Hopefully that pays off, because they teased it in the cover here, and it seems like it would be too cool to pass up. But then you get kind of Doctor Strange, and this can't be in continuity because he's Sorcerer Supreme somehow. So I'm like, what the fuck is happening? But they zap Godzilla away, which, come on, man. You guys tried that with the Hulk, and that did not go well. So I don't know why you would try to do that, you know. You let Godzilla be Godzilla, and then he goes back to the ocean, and then you're fine. So why would you try to zap him away? That just doesn't seem...
Well, he doesn't seem like he wants to return to the ocean in this one. He seems very mad. None of the normal stuff is working on him. Hank Pym tries to zap him with some shrinking particles. Doesn't work. We get only the crimson bands of Sidorak work briefly, but that's about it. Everyone else fails, which I thought was very fun. I love the rejection of Venom. Like, hey, get that symbiote out of here. We don't want him to also have other powers, I guess. But what I love about this, and the reason it is different to what I was speaking to earlier, is the tone of this is fun and light, and but still based in Marvel continuity. Like, I like all of the use of the different characters. The bar with no name is smashed, getting all the villains to go after Godzilla, which is cool. I love the way that Godzilla is banished at a point, and then the whole reality shakes, and they're like, oh, shit. Godzilla is going to smash down the walls of this universe. I was like, what? How does that work? But really fun. The opening, dealing with an older Fantastic Four getting wrecked, I thought was really cool and really well drawn. Yeah. I love Human Torch's flame beard. I wish he had that all the time. The next issue, we get Godzilla and the X-Men, the X-Universe, hanging out. So that will be fun. But let's move on and talk about Superman Unlimited number 4 from DC Comics by Dan Slott.
Favorites of the week.
Nat Pick from our live show. He jumped in and joined us on the stream. Written by Dan Slott, art by Lucas Meyer and Raphael Albuquerque. The Kirkies on this. The cover text tells it all. Knight of the Superman Bat. This is, I think, the notable thing here is Dan Slott has been writing this Superman book, his shot to tell all the Superman stories he's been wanting to tell, and they're constructed in such a Slottian way that I think is really nice. In this issue, Superman's just going about his business. He saves someone. We talked about this in the live show, that Dan Slott's been setting up a lot of new continuity ideas in the Superman universe, but he's not pushing them. He's letting them sort of live in the world in this title and is slowly rolling them out. One of them is there's a lot more kryptonite hanging around. And in this, we see that Superman saves someone, but she's wearing a bunch of kryptonite jewelry and lipstick, kisses him, weakens him. So when he goes to Gotham to help out Jimmy Olsen and Tina, a gorilla from Gorilla City who's visiting Gotham with Jimmy for some scientific work, I believe, they encounter a new man-bat who bites Superman and turns him into a Superman bat. So just a really nice little box that Dan Slott constructed here, storytelling-wise. How do you like this?
Yeah, this is fun. Dan Slott has a lot of fun, and this is a fun idea of, like, what if Superman was a vampire? It's not October yet, but, man, this is still a fun idea. So, yeah, I love the kind of, fighting the Canary team and all that kind of stuff. That was a ton of stuff. And then I also like Slott's little kind of Easter egg of, like, somebody keeps stealing the E's off Daily Planet, and then so it makes it Daily Plant. And so someone was like, oh, probably is Ivy. But then the fun reveal, and again, spoilers, but that Robin has been stealing all the E's. I think that's just hilarious. I'm like, oh, Dan Slott,
what's he doing with those E's?
Cap. Yeah, that's a lot of E's, bro.
But Dan Slott his stories are so constructed. They're little Swiss watches. And speaking of watches, he uses Jimmy Olsen's Superman watch to great effect here. Yeah. Like, you can tell he's really thought these through. He's a meticulous storyteller, and that's what this book is all about.
Also, let's talk art by Albuquerque is phenomenal.
Yes, and Lucas Meyer on art. But let's talk Exceptional X-Men number 12. This is from Marvel Comics, written by Eve L. Ewing, art by Federica Manson, or Mancine. Like, we are... This is Alex's favorite X title, I think. He really likes these characters, so it's a shame he's not here, because this issue is such a Kitty Pryde issue. And we're setting into a Kitty Pryde arc. Kitty Pryde has vanished in time. A new mutant accidentally teleported her into a different era. And so this team of new mutants, who are coached by the White Queen and Iceman, has to head back in time to go find Kitty. Pete, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, first off, Kitty Pryde has got herself a dance studio. Leave her alone. You know what I mean? Like, she's living her best life now. And if you kind of rip her out of that timeline, I mean, think about all those kids who won't get to learn to dance. You know what I mean? And that's just...
You're talking about at the end of the issue, Kitty Pryde is in front of a dance school.
Not in front of. She started. It's her dance school. You can tell by the sign.
You don't know that that's the case. You think the part of the story is that she started a dance school and she needs to dance?
Yeah. You got to let her dance, man. You see the way she's dressed?
She's a dance instructor. You think she's in a full... You think she's in a Footloose situation? That they've banned dancing in the town?
No, I think they've banned something horrible, and dance is the only solution.
You know, it's like a reverse Footloose.
That's right.
Where they must dance.
They must
Everyone in town must dance.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is an absolutely unhinged take on this. What's happening in this comic.
Well, I mean,
that's taking
you got Emma being a shitty leader and mean and stupid. I checked out on this. So, but when I saw the dance happening, I was like, well, you better not stop her from dancing, because this is the best storyline I've seen about her in forever.
This is going to really crush on Panel Club, where you analyze this one panel and make a lot of wild assumptions about what's happening, because that's literally looking at the last page and being like, this is about dance, when it's not. It's about these mutants traveling back in time. The only thing, something about this title just doesn't quite hit with me, and I don't know exactly what it is, because I like the characters. We have Ironheart guest starring here, which I think is cool. I like this new mutant that's introduced and the way that his powers work. But there's just some, like, the characters are like, oh, it must be a time portal. We have to find Kitty. She's lost in time. And so they show up in different clothes, but how do they know what era the clothes are supposed to be? But it happens to be the right one. It's just like there's some stuff that just catches me each time, each issue of this I read. So, again, this is Alex's favorite. He will defend it till he dies, but he's not here.
That's right.
Because he's probably taking a nice, long nap. Let's move over to talk about Undiscovered Country number 32. A night nap. It's called sleeping. Undiscovered Country number 32 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule and Scott Snyder.
What a duo. Both of them. Oh, my God.
CNS, just like R&D. Art by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. This comic is like, it's ramping up. We're on the moon. We're getting the backstory on our Uncle Sam character here. There's been so much. This comic has been just the wildest mix of ideas, bringing in
amazing
any sci-fi concept you could think of. And it's all coming together to what I think is building up to. This is the final arc, so we're very close to the finale. How do you think it's coming together, Pete?
Really well. This has been really impressive, this journey. All over the place, and it's hysterical because we, like the kind of people in this comic, are like another Uncle Sam, and he's like, no dude, I'm the real one. This comic continues to be impressive and have really cool ideas and a tripped out premise that they pull off, which is really impressive. This is an amazing team on this. I also love this idea. Also the back matter really rocks on this. But I also love the idea that the Washington Monument is just a sword. And it's like a person underground just waiting for the signal to fight. Oh, my God. I thought that was so cool.
That was cool.
Yeah.
And that's such an idea. Sorry, real quick. That's such an idea of like when you're a kid and you're just reading comics, you're like, oh shit, what if there's a giant robot just gripping the bottom of the Washington Monument like a sword? And they just pay it off here, which is really fun.
Yeah, it's very cool. But also the couple who kind of like kiss and hug and they're like, what do we need to do? Like, get you hype, man. This is just really impressive. I mean, some issues I'm like, what's happening? But then it just wins me back over. So I've been really impressed with this overall and cannot wait to see how this ends because it's been a really out there comic.
Yeah, really nice, like you're mentioning, really nice emotional sort of core to this issue particularly. But my takeaway from reading this issue and sort of this final arc is that, you know, this comic is about America, sort of like, I think, undiscovered country is a direct, like, it's about America being walled and no one can get in and things change inside. Time moves differently. It's about taking American ideas and using science fiction and in some cases fantasy to just blow out these ideas. But I feel like over the course of their work on this book, America has changed a lot. We don't have to talk about how or what we feel about it, but I'd be curious to talk to them as this comes to a close on how their writing of this, Scott and Charles,
has changed over
the course. Because this issue particularly feels like it's about a different America, or it's incorporating different ideas about America than what they were incorporating at the beginning of it. So definitely a conversation I want to have next time we talk to those guys, because this issue is really nice, telling the story about the pretty dark story about what happens on this moon base and the progress that they make and how they do it.
You should talk to Alex about maybe getting them on the show again, because it'd be
we're going to reach out and get them going, because it's coming to a close soon and they'd be great to have on to talk about it, because there's a lot to talk about. So definitely read this issue, finish the series, and we'll talk more about it soon. But right now, let's talk about Crypto, The Last Dog of Krypton, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Ryan North with art by Mike Norton. There's been in the Detective Comics comic we talked about earlier, there was a very emotional story about dogs.
Yeah.
That I said I teared up reading. I don't know if because I'm not with my dog right now. Maybe I'm like having dog emotions, man.
You're going through withdrawal, dog withdrawal, I think maybe.
Dog withdrawal. The ultimate drug is dogs. But this issue was like really, really got me too. Like it was really upsetting, and this comic doesn't have a lot of dialogue. It's just crypto out there living.
Well, it's kind of like Kung Fu, but Crypto. I mean, Crypto is just walking the earth, solving problems. You know what I mean? He sees a kid, he's going to save him, and then he's on to the next adventure. Man, I mean. And then we get a little teaser of Brainiac, which is always scary. But I love the art. I love the lack of words. We get to kind of fill up what we think is happening. I think it's such a cool idea. And I like this is a cool take on Crypto. And I'm really enjoying the execution on this because it's really well done.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's just such an emotional, there's so many really well done emotional moments in this, just a great blend of writing and a really evocative art. So definitely, if you're a dog lover, you got to get you some Crypto. But let's talk New Avengers number 3 from Marvel Comics, written by Sam Humphries, art by Tan Lima. Here we have a team of Avengers led by Bucky. And they are dealing with the Killuminati. Dark takes on the Illuminati characters. Pete's shaking his head, which means, yes, I love this. Give me some more.
Yeah, I walked away from this comic. It lost
me. You walked away?
Yeah.
You walked away. You sat it down and
I sat it down and walked away and have not walked back. When it says,
How many steps you do? To get in like 10 G's?
Yeah, 10 G's easy. I just think, you know, with the evil professor or whatever the fuck's happening, and he says, away my haters, I was like, no, I'm done. You can go fuck yourself on that line.
Why?
That's just...
Why? He's bad. He's the Killuminati.
There's something about, like, hey, you're in on the joke. You're kind of like, you know why we're saying this, but it's also like making fun of me in a way that I don't appreciate. I was like, no. You don't get to say this to me. You don't know me well enough to do this. So I was like, no, fuck you. So
that's great. I mean, you are really hyper-focused. Certain panels really light you up. Yeah. I don't know why, because it's like, to me, my X-Men, but the opposite.
Yeah, so it says, away my haters, and I was like, fuck you. You don't get to make that
but
joke.
But it's like, well, that's like bizarre. The whole thing is they're bizarros.
Yeah, yeah, and life is bizarro enough. I don't need this shit. You know what I mean? So
I thought you would like that because you hate regular Professor
X. I hate regular. I do. And I don't like what he's been doing, and I don't like the choices he's made. So the fact that they're just going evil, and then that line just hit me in a way that it made me really mad, and I just stopped reading it. And so
interesting. I like this. I think this is like the Thunderbolts movie, asterisk, New Avengers. I feel like this is a good follow-up to that, deeply rooted in Marvel continuity. Like, we get an opening sequence of the team breaking into Hulk, the current Hulk, who has Bruce Banner locked up inside him. They have to talk to him and get some info out of him. I thought that was cool.
Stabs him, and the green blood was a lot. I was like, yo, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, but like, I like that. That's taking the current Hulk, which is much more horror influence that Philip Kennedy Johnson's doing, and sort of brought that home. In times past, the Hulk would be impervious, or definitely wouldn't be so bloody, but because it's a horror Hulk, we get the blood, and we get Wolverine being like, oh shit, I'm good at this, I'm killing the Hulk. I thought that was great. There's a nice tone to this, it's a little irreverent, the characters are having fun in their crisis points. The team is sort of weird, we've got Bucky, Wolverine X-23, we've got Namor, we've got Clea, we've got Black Widow, we have the current Carnage, which over in Charles Soule's book is Eddie Brock, so we get him here. The twisted characters, we get sort of the Killuminati Doctor Strange as well as Professor X, I thought was cool. I'm enjoying this.
Well, good. I'm glad you like it.
You walk away, I'm going to sit down twice.
The fuck off, bro.
Very lit up by that one particular line. Don't say the wrong thing to Pete in a bar because he will walk away from you, which maybe is the goal. Let's talk about the season's number 7. The other side of the, I would never walk away from you in a bar, Pete, because you are often being bought drinks by the bartender. Let's talk about the season's number 7 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender. Remender, the second Remender. Art by Paul Azaceta. I have
R
been
square,
loving
baby,
this.
Come on.
All right, let's do this. We got quadruple R's in this stack because we got R to the R times 2. I like this book a lot. It's about a family named where the daughters are named after the four seasons, which you can Google them on your own. They're facing down a fucked up circus, fucked up than the regular circus. Yeah. And it's an all out. This issue is an all out like chase race, trying to get away from a lot of like candy cane tentacles coming for them.
Yeah, this is like a nightmare come to life here. This is just insane what happens here. First off, one hell of a cover. We got a winner on a motorcycle with a big ass knife. I mean, hell's to the yes. This gets you so excited for what's inside, and what's inside delivers, man. This just continues to rock. We have kind of like Summer, who was the one who kind of got warned about the evil circus. And Zelbin's not here to defend clowns, but yeah, this shit is fucked up and evil.
That guy defends clowns.
Well, I mean, he married one, so like he's in it. You know what I mean?
But it's not a bit. He married a clown. She's a clown.
An amazing person and clown, I should say.
Yes, great. We love Alex's wife, but she's a clown. He's out with this clown right now.
That's beautiful. Anyways, this is worth it for the art alone. This is magical. It's just such the colors, the panels. This is just so beautiful and such a world of imagination. It's just really impressive artistically what's happening here. But I just love this kind of like they're trying to outrun a circus tent and they're losing hard. And it feels like a nightmare come to life in all the best ways. And I'm having such a fun time reading this. This is a blast. And we haven't really got to spend any time not really learning about the family or anything because there's so much action. And
we learned a little bit. Like, our main character is Spring. She's on the run. She encounters Summer here who's like caught up in her mirror, a nice sort of touch
Spring
on the
is
modern.
The main girl. I'm sorry. I said
Spring
Summer.
Is the young girl. Yeah, main, yes. But yeah, that's Winter who's like the darker sister.
Yeah.
But it is like madcap. It's not even just a dream, but it's like a fever dream or an anxiety dream where like it's stressful how much is coming for them. And we get some nice turnabout at the end of this issue. So looking forward to where it goes next, but definitely
cannot wait for the next issue. This is such an epic tale. I've been really loving this.
Pick up the Devil Remender this week.
Yeah.
But let's move on to the Umbrella Academy Plan B number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Gerard Way, art by Gabriel Ba. Now, this comic is incorporating some of the characters from the Umbrella Academy Netflix show that we watched exhaustively and covered in our Umbrella Podcademy show. I think that was the name of that podcast. But definitely, if you haven't watched that show, it is good. We're bringing in the Sparrows into the actual Umbrella Academy comic book universe. Pete, I would like you to explain to me all of the things that happen in this comic.
Nope. I will not. But I would like to just say that, like, first off, amazing cover. Just seeing this brings me back to a time when Umbrella Academy was first coming out, and what a fun world that was, you know. It's the nostalgia factor of just seeing this coming out again makes me very happy. Starts with a maze. Which is always fun. I love a good maze. Mm. I solved it on my laptop and used Sharpie and got all the way to the center of the maze. So pretty cool.
Really good, Pete.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, just like when my mom used to give me the highlights when we were waiting to see the dentist, you know, just grabbing my Sharpie and going to town. But then you got the kids playing soccer with a head, which, you know, it's important to get out there and have some activities, but man alive, that's a real twisted fucking turn on a lovely pastime.
Hey, baller's gonna ball. When you got a ball, you got anything round will work.
Just so great to see number 5 in this. He's number 5 in the TV show. Such an amazing, fun character. Also in the comics. Kind of finds a gray hair, has a moment there. And he's got a ton of guns from Diego, which makes me laugh. I love the twists and turns that's happening in this. And like JT Sizz was alluding to, I'm not sure of everything that is happening, but I am along for the ride because the art is such a vibe and it's a whole thing. And I love it.
I mean, this is the classic team. It's a classic Umbrella Academy style story where we're jumping around. There's fun stuff. There's horrifying stuff. There's the characters we know. There's a ton of other new characters. It's one notch turned away from me understanding what's happening. Like, it's very close, and I like it. It's just one notch where I'm like, I don't know what all of this means. And there's a lot of that in every Umbrella Academy issue. Mm-hmm. But it's just one notch too many, I think, for me to, like, really be 100% on board with it. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to keep reading it. But I just wish we knew a little bit more about what was happening. That's okay. We'll keep reading the next issue.
Could happen in the next issue, you know? Yeah, maybe could. By the next issue it clicks in.
It clicks in. But the next issue we're going to talk about, and the last issue of this stack, is the Department of Truth number 33 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion the IV, art by Letizia Cadonici. This is sort of bringing in, we have this Hat Man arc, and coming to a close here. Yes, the Hat Man to the tune of the Scat Man, I want to say.
Yeah.
I love this comic. This Hat Man arc has been such a departure stylistically and sort of just the story has been almost a standalone comic that I've really enjoyed. And this issue actually brings everything into the fold. I like what's happening here. I like the way that this arc was all about technology and how that's different in the way that the world of Department of Truth works, where if enough people believe something, it basically comes true. This arc has been like an internet thing. Here's how we would tell that story in this Department of Truth universe. And they folded it in so nicely and smoothly. And I really like where sort of the trap is ready to be sprung jumping into the next arc.
Well, that's exciting. It seems like maybe the next arc is going to deal with the devil. It seemed like
something.
That, yeah, it seemed
well,
like
well, we're bringing idea. Like a new idea. Yeah, it feels like literally the line is we need to invite the devil to the party.
Yeah,
it could be the full satanic panic thing that they've gestured to a bit in this comic, all the way from the very beginning, but haven't really got all the way into, and maybe that's literally, like you're saying, what's next.
Yeah, I mean, this comic is a little bit over my head, but the art is just really impressive. This cover here is creepy as fuck. But artistically, what this comic is doing is really impressive. It's sometimes does like these newsprint kind of creepy things, and other times there's like colors bleeding into other panels. It's really impressive. You never kind of, every time I open up a Department of Truth comic, I'm always surprised and impressed by the tone and the artistic kind of flexibility that it has. It's creepy as fuck, and it kind of does a lot of different things. But man, it's a fun ride, and I'm glad that we have JT Sizzle to try to break it down for us.
Always trying to break it down. And speaking of that, we've just broken down the entire stack. Woo-hoo! That's the end, folks. We'll be back next week with a whole another fresh stack. In the meantime, you can check us out every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock when we do our live show, Comic Book Club. Join our Patreon so you can come and be on our Discord and hear about all the other wild stuff we're talking about week in and week out. That's at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Check out Comic Book Club News, our news podcast, Sons of a Gun, where we're about to be talking about Peacemaker, the new season that's dropping so soon. You can just subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Check us out on Blue Sky, Comic Book Club, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, comicbookclublive.com. Folks, we will be back next week, and that is the tap on your ass that heads you out, right back out on the streets. Please enjoy. Good night. We'll see you next week.
Take care of yourself.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.